Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Gut Wrench Podcast. I do apologize for my lengthy absence. However, I do have a great excuse. I don't think it's that great, but I've been going through a period in life known as homelessness. And unfortunately for me, I am technically homeless. Upon technically being homeless, however, something that you all should understand is that I'm staying in a hotel room and I've been having a blast. The time of my life. You remember that song? I had the time of my life and I owe it all to you. Yeah, well, that's exactly what I'm having here. Honestly, I got nobody to tell me what to do. Nobody to, you know, make rules. I make my own rules, practically. However, I will start coming back to the podcast scene now that everything has been taken care of as far as, like, most, if not any, living expenses have been taken care of. The only problem that I'm having now is that sometimes, every once in a while, I don't know how else to put this, but there's, like, drunk people. And I'm talking, like, a lot of drunk people outside my door. Every fucking day, I'll have some drunk, outside my door, and then they'll be, like, you know, talking about NASCAR or Billy Ray Cyrus or some other convoluted nonsense. I didn't want to leave. I wanted to continue doing my podcast. However, it took me quite a few weeks in order to finally find a wrestling show, watch it, review it, and for that matter, actually come up with a halfway decent reason as to why I was missing. What made me go and decide to go the way of the crows, just leave. Because I did not want to leave podcasting. However, I had two episodes. I had them already ready to go, but then WrestleMania happened. And for those of you who are not in the loop of what happened at WrestleMania, somebody won a championship that they did not earn and that they do not deserve. That somebody's name is Sami Zayn. So once again, even though I had two episodes in the bag, I had two episodes ready to go, I had two episodes that I was ready to unleash on the world, like I said on YouTube, and yes, I did return to YouTube, not like consistently, because really I've got nothing to talk about that I can't talk about on here. This is primarily a more, it's a more in-depth version of what my YouTube channel would be. And it's a lot better because here I can talk about practically anything. YouTube has a lot of restrictions. Here, not only can I talk about almost practically anything, but also I can do it in a matter in which that I can cover almost anything, if not everything. And on YouTube, I would have to split it into 2 or 3, 4 or 5, 6 or 7, 10 or 12 different, you know, videos. Otherwise, they'd be overlapping and all kinds of other nonsense would be happening, you know. And here it's a lot easier to listen to an hour podcast rather than watch an hour long video. Anyway, thank you all so much for joining me. My name is Mocha. This is the Gut Wrench Podcast. Episode 119, if I am correct. And seeing as though that we are on strike from the WWE, I thought that we would look at this past week, AEW Dynamite, where they were live in Charleston, West Virginia. And Charleston, West Virginia, of course, is my hometown. Well, not Charleston specifically, but West Virginia is where I'm from. It's sort of my hometown, so I was happy to hear that they were coming back to Charleston. I'm pretty sure that that's like the second or third time that AEW has come to Charleston, West Virginia. Usually, the small towns, you know, like WWE never comes to Charleston, West Virginia. That's never going to be a local promoting ground unless it's somebody like Hulk Hogan who's coming over to sign some autographs, but you're probably going to have to pay $5, $10, $12, $50 just to get him to sign a picture and take a picture with you. Anyway, aside from all that jizz and jazz and nonsense, episode 119, if I am correct, and in a rather controversial match opening for what seems to be some sort of AEW World Championship Eliminator. I'm not really sure what that means, so I put it in air quotes. And I'm not really sure what that means is what I put here on my notes. But I would come to realize, like, thanks to Tony Schiavone on commentary, thanks to Excalibur, and thanks to Taz, they told me that what that means is that if Dustin Rhodes wins his match here tonight, that he will have a future championship opportunity against Samoa Joe. But this was advertised, like, across social media as the main event of tonight. But instead of it being the main event, they're going to open the show with this match. So that's why I put in a rather controversial match opening for what seems to be the AEW World Heavyweight Championship Eliminator. Anyway, in a rather controversial match opening contest where Samoa Joe was supposed to face off against the natural Dustin Rhodes, which in my opinion should not have been the opening contest, that should have been the main event. But before the contest even begins, Joe was attacked from behind by his opponent on Sunday, April 21st, 2024, a day before my birthday, Mocha's birthday. Once again, not the point, but the point is AEW World Heavyweight Championship match, which was advertised, like, on social media and whatever else. If I remember correctly, it was advertised as the last match on the card, the main event, but instead of it being the main event, it didn't happen at all. It might still happen, don't get me wrong, and that's foreshadowing, because they do have it later on in the night. Stay tuned for more updates on that. But the fact that it was going to happen as the opening contest was what I'm trying to say. It should have not been the opening contest. And we are in Charleston, West Virginia. We get a highlights package from what I'm assuming is last week. And upon getting the highlights package, a presentation, of course, of Excalibur. Presentation according to Excalibur, there's been a rift in the best friends. As I've stated before, the best friends are, if I remember correctly, Trent Beretta and Chuck Taylor and Orange Cassidy. However, There's also the trio is known as the Best Friends, but any two combinations of like Trent Beretta, Chuck Taylor, or any two combinations of the three is what I should say, is they're just known as Just Friends. They're no longer Best Friends, but any combination of the three, which there's only three of them unless you count Kristen Statlander, in which case I don't really count her, but they are the Best Friends. Anyway, there's been a rift in the Best Friends, according to Excalibur, and then we get sort of a highlights package of that, and we get Orange Cassidy, who says that next week he wants to challenge Trent Beretta to a match. Now, I didn't write that down, and I could be remembering this a little bit. Maybe I should have written it down, but either it's going to be next week or it's going to once again be at that pay-per-view that's going to be held at April 21st, on Sunday, April 21st, because my birthday's on a Monday this year. I was born on a Friday. Anyway, according to Renee, okay, so I put here on my notes that I cannot pronounce her last name, but I think that I can. According to Renee, Paquette should be her last name. According to Renee, however, she got to speak to Orange Cassidy, who told her that this Friday he will address the actions of Trent Beretta. Why couldn't we just get the interview instead of having the interviewer tell us what the person said off camera? We had the same problem at the last pay-per-view for AEW we looked at called Revolution. But I'm not upset about it. Just wish that we would have gotten the TV time of the actual interview rather than the interviewer telling us what happened in the supposed interview that took place off camera. You know, that's sort of one of those middle school things, like your friend would walk up to you and then he would say, "Hey, Stacy told me she likes you." And then you walk up to Stacy and then you're like, "Hey, my friend," and you know, Stacy doesn't know what's going on. She doesn't have a goddamn clue what's going on. And then you sit beside of Stacy at lunch that day, and then you're like, "So, what you getting into?" You know, you're just taking a bite of your PB&J sandwich, and you're looking at Stacy, and then she's like, "Ew!" You know, like, you're just thinking the worst she can say is no. Reminds me of something that happened to me at Applebee's. So, I used to work at Applebee's, right? And one day I came into work, and there's two waiters. Can't remember their names. Nonetheless, one of them got to talking to another one, and she pulled me aside, and she had asked me, did I tell the cooking staff that me and her were, you know, doing the devil's tango, you know, sex. And I had told her no, because, I mean, guys, I'm gonna level with you. If I was having, you know, intercourse, some sort of, this is awkward to talk about, but if I was doing the devil's tango, if I was having sex, you know, I wouldn't go boasting about it. I don't care if you're my friend or not, you know, like, I'm not going to be like, "Hey, see that girl over there? She had a car accident last night. Let's just say she didn't get any sleep last night." You know, like, I wouldn't. So my sexual innuendo is just somewhere else. But I wouldn't, like, do that. You know, know, that you see why she's walking funny? I did that. Yep. I wasn't watching where I was going. The light turned red. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't make this shit up, I guess. Anyway, that happened at Applebee's whenever I worked there, and I tried telling her, no, I didn't tell the kitchen staff that we were having sex. And then I tried to ask, you know, her friend, like I said, there were two waiters, but I tried to ask her friend who had said that, you know, specifically, because her friend told her that one of them had said that in the kitchen staff. And then she's like, I don't know. Okay. Why do you gotta be so vague? You know, like, I would confront them. I would ask them, hey, you know, which one of you said that I'd said something? Like, this is just a game of telephone at this point. And, you know, that's stupid. That's stupid. Like I said, it brings me back to my example of, you know, hey, you know, Jolanda said she likes you, you know. Oh, really? Oh, let me go shoot my shot with Jolanda. And then your friends are standing back there and they're like, that's not really what she said. Anyway, I just don't know why Renee has to have the interview. Why couldn't they say, and here's what happened off camera, and then take us to the, what happened off camera but actually happened on AEW.com. The following contest is scheduled for 30 minutes or less. I don't even know why I'm making a big deal about it, but it's okay. And is for the TNT Championship as Penta versus Adam Copeland, the champion. So Adam Copeland, after his career resurgence, after the WWE, after he was Edge for all that time, he just decided that it was a good idea, seeing as though that WWE wouldn't hire him back, I'm guessing, seeing as though that he's more of a liability than anything else, you know? But he's not done. It's basically the story of his life. He said that he's not finished with his career, and he knows that he's still got it in him in order to fight the good fight, so to speak. And I think this is the first Adam Copeland match I will be rating, so it's technically not the first Adam Copeland match, but that I will be rating, because we do have some matches of him as Edge, the performer known as the Rated R Superstar, but he's moved to AEW and changed his name to Adam Copeland. Before this match begins, we get an interesting note that I'm putting here. I'm curious to know if Adam Copeland will be able to keep up with the lucha, with the luchador, rather, in Penta Escure. He says something, he keeps saying something, and I can't for the life of me. It translates in Spanish, like Penta's name, Penta, and then there's Zero Miñardo, or something like that. That's like his full name, and it's supposed to mean Penta Zero Fear. Nonetheless, Adam Copeland will be teaming with Eddie Kingston and Mark Briscoe to face off against the House of Black, Malakai Black, Brody King, and Buddy Matthews on their next pay-per-view event, Dynasty, which, as I stated before, is one day before my birthday. Hey! On April 21st this year, will we be reviewing Dynasty? Probably. Maybe. I'm going to think about it. Penta hits Copeland with a spear and only gets a two count, playing mind games with Copeland. Then Penta hits Copeland with a coup de grace, only for Copeland to kick out very late into big chops on the ropes by Penta. Penta throws Copeland into the ring post skull first. During this match, at some point of some sort of drawing, okay, some sort of drawing shows up on the screen, and it shows up very briefly. It seems to be an egg yolk, I would assume. It has many numbers, and it's almost like in a clockwise motion. It's almost like one of the producers was trying to send a message to another producer, but accidentally put the graphic over the camera. I thought it was appropriate to point it out. Someone in the production truck messed up, and I'm honestly thinking it's a map of some sort to show. This is the most jank map I've ever seen. I'm thinking that it's a map to show where all the cameras are in the arena are located, but it looks like a poor man's drawing of an egg. Very unorthodox offense maneuver by Penta, including a head scissors and a headstand. Handstand is what I should say. He did not do anything. Okay, we get a rally into a stalemate by both individuals, both the champion and the challenger, thinking the same thing. They each hit each other with a drop kick at the same time, and now we've got a double down. The crowd is absolutely coming unglued. They're clapping and applauding at every action. Sling blade by Penta. The challenger, of course, is Penta, with the big boot to the champion on the outside of the ring as Penta starts to take control of this match. We get a dueling chance. Let's go, Penta. Let's go, Adam. Passionate crowd, and they are absolutely expressing their enjoyment. They are getting to watch this match, this contest. Camera pans from the wrestling ring to see all of the fans in the audience, and they are clapping, they're happy, they're making a lot of noise. The reason that I point this out is because crowd reaction really plays a pivotal role in my reviews. In my reviews, I play crowd reaction to be a part of the actual rating system, because if you can move the crowd, then it shows that you're telling a well enough story that you deserve points, if not stars, for that. Penta off the backbreaker only gets a two. I'm sorry, the backstabber only gets a two. Adam Copeland with an electric chair drop on Penta. Adam Copeland with a scorpion deathlock. As if you could tell, as far as I can tell, but commentary keeps calling it some sort of modified sharpshooter. Penta makes it to the ropes to force the break on the submission maneuver. People of Charleston, West Virginia are clapping at every move, and they are absolutely applauding these two for their commitment and overall storytelling as Adam Copeland starts to get Penta in an ankle lock. Copeland kicks out of a drop kick in the corner by Penta. Copeland has Penta in the crossface, shades of Chris Benoit, and Penta forces the break by getting to the ropes. He's got his, I'm pretty sure he gets his foot under the rope, and the referee calls for the break. After a short chain of reversals, rather, into reversals, we get a powerful power slam on the apron from Adam Copeland, the champion, to Penta. And he hits him, like, right where that rough part of the ring is, according to, like, Excalibur. That's the hardest part of the ring, is what I'm told. But anyway, like, Penta runs at Adam Copeland, and Adam Copeland absolutely floors him, turns it into some sort of scoop power slam. The crowd gasps in shock when the move was executed. Penta hits an avalanche code red, only gets a two count off the top rope. The champion kicks out yet again. This is awesome chants start echoing throughout the arena. The spear by Copeland and the wind. So it looks like Penta was going for some sort of drop kick off the second rope, but instead Adam Copeland caught him in midair and ended up picking up the victory off the spear. And we get that match was a absolute fantastic performance by both men. Absolutely amazing performance by both men. And the match is amazing. It went really hard. And the storytelling was absolutely fantastic. And I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. We get a preview of things to come after the match when the lights go out. And behind Adam Copeland is Brody King, the House of Black. And Brody King, having tried to get a hold of the TBS champion, I'm sorry, the TNT champion, to soften him up, and Julia Hart providing the distraction. So whenever the lights go out, whenever the lights come on, Adam Copeland is looking at the TBS champion, the TBS women's champion, Julia Hart. And he's looking at Julia Hart, but behind him is the big 6'3", 285-pound man, Brody King. And Brody King waits for him to turn around as Julia Hart's telling him to look behind him. And whenever he looks behind, he sees this big, beefy man. Then all of a sudden, Willow Nightingale comes out, and she starts ruining all the fun because, of course, she's got a match with the TBS champion, Julia Hart, perhaps to build hype, but they did this whole thing perhaps to build hype for the House of Black versus Briscoe, Kingston, and Copeland. For me, this match really doesn't belong, like, at their next pay-per-view, Dynasty, because Briscoe has a championship, Copeland has a championship, and if I'm right, Kingston also has a, like, why would you not just let Adam Copeland have a number one contender and then face his, like, take into consideration that he's going to have to be a fighting champion? But I guess it's made up for, because this right here against, like, this was a wonderful match against Penta that he just had. This was a title match. It was an absolute banger of a match, and there was no interference until after the match was done. And that's something that I would love, absolutely love, to shake Tony Khan's hand and tell him, thank you, sir. Thank you. Because any time, ladies and gentlemen, that you want to go back, watch some old wrestling, I bet you that an 85 to a 95% chance that if you're watching something from WWE back in the 1980s to the 1990s and even early 2000s, that renaissance period of wrestling that you love to relive, and that you're always like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? You know, because it always gives you that good feeling, that good energetic feeling of, holy crap, I'm watching something that I haven't seen in 20 years, but still I have this euphoria because, you know, I grew up watching this, and It's almost like popping in an old cartoon, you know, and watching back everything that you, and not only that, but maybe you would want your children to see that. Me personally, I don't have children, nor do I need children. That's not the point that I'm trying to make. Hopefully, my point has been pursued a little bit here. But what I mean to say is that whenever you go back and then you watch all of that, you're 95%, I'm telling you right now, none of the matches have any sort of clean conclusion. There's absolutely an abundance of storytelling, but at the same time, the storytelling is all over the place. You want to watch a wrestling match. You want to watch some competition, some one-on-one competition. I would implore you to please watch AEW because they are raising the bar and the standards for professional wrestling. Because you don't have clowns like Sami Zayn who have championship titles that they haven't earned nor deserved. Oh, and as well as House of Black versus Briscoe, Kingston, and Copeland, well, you're also going to see Willow Nightingale versus Julia Hart. Now, had it been up to me, Willow Nightingale would not be in this match. Kristen Statlander would be in this match. Anna Jay would be in this match. I would say Toni Storm, but she's got a match at Dynasty, so I couldn't put her in the match unless it was like a unification match. But we'll talk about Toni Storm whenever we get there. Chris Jericho showing off one of his obvious character flaws as he tries to control a group that looks as though that they do not want to be controlled. They don't want to be taken control of in Hook and Shibata. In the interview with Renee, now, once again, I cannot pronounce her last name unless it's Paquette, possibly. But in an interview, he sort of overshadows all of their accomplishments as he says, you guys tonight, you're going to be sitting under the learning tree. You're going to be basking in the glory that is Chris Jericho. You know, like he's really laying it on thick for these boys because he's the veteran and they need to learn to appreciate him. He comes off very arrogant. Rather than letting them speak, he's doing all of the speaking for them. And I don't think Hook or Shibata likes it. At the end of the interview, they find a way for us to understand most of these Japanese-speaking wrestlers. Shibata has a phone in his hand, and it allows him to press a button, and it speaks English for him. At the end of the interview, he does something that Triple H sort of did a long time ago. There will be a link in the description below, to tell you what Triple H did on this night in 2008. In an interview that Triple H had with Eve Torres. So Eve Torres was trying to interview him, and let's just say that she's not wearing she's not wearing any top except for sort of a I want to call it a tank top. Anyway, you can see a considerable amount of almost like more than a handful, just throwing it out there, and she's wearing this pearl necklace as well. But I mean, nobody's looking at the pearl necklace, let's be honest. And Triple H, in the interview, not to spoil it or anything, but he's a little bit distracted. And Eve just wants her question answered. You know, she's just trying to do her job as an interviewer. And keep in mind, this was during the PG era of WWE. But anyway, what ends up happening is a little bit of miscommunication between the viewer, the person watching, and what's actually happening. Because the whole interview, Triple H is like, I'm sorry, I just keep looking at those. He asks for once, are they real? And then the next thing that he asks is, I can't stop staring at them. He says, can I touch them? And then Eve says, yes, of course. And then he proceeds to grab her pearls on her necklace and starts fondling them. And then he's like, these are really fine. Where'd you get these from? You know, I'm just like, oh my God, that's not what he was talking about. I mean, it's clear that anyway, Shibata. Back to what I was saying, Shibata. On his phone, I guess he types something in, and then he lets the AI voice speak for him, and he tells Renee Paquette, I like your necklace. You wasn't looking at her necklace. She wasn't wearing a shirt. I mean, she was wearing a shirt. That's not what I mean. She wasn't an undershirt. That's what I should have said. Anyway, I'll leave a link in the description below for those of you who are curious to know, you know, maybe I didn't express it a little bit. That's what that reminded me of, though. You know, and I go on YouTube all the time, or at least I used to whenever I was a young boy, and I used to look at the funniest moments of WWE superstars. And then I would watch these videos, and I'd probably see them like 6 or 7, 10 or 12, 25 times, but I didn't care. I'd just watch them just to pass the time, and then I'd laugh at the same fucking jokes every goddamn time. And that was one of the things that they would show on those compilation videos. And it was so funny. And growing up, I didn't understand it. But now I do. Anyway, a rather controversial turn of events as the executive vice presidents of AEW, the Young Bucks, Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, the Jackson brothers, Generation Me, have exclusive footage from the All In event and will be discussing what happened for the first time. We see some of the never before seen footage with no audio. I'm assuming there was audio, but something was said that needed to be cut out of it. However, judging by what he did see, by what we did see, what I understand, CM Punk was the man who threw the first punch, and upon doing so, everything that he said prior to this incident can't be taken seriously. It's hard for me, as I want to say journalism to inform you of what took place here. I myself don't know what took place. So I don't know what I was trying to say here. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I don't know why it says I want to say journalism. You know, it's hard for me to say what's going on here. I want to say for journalist, you know, sake, maybe that's what I was trying to say. But from what I'm holding it seems, from what I'm told, it was something to do with real glass. Jack Perry wanted to use real glass in a wrestling spot that was going to be a spot that he was going for to set up. So Jack Perry wanted to use real glass, and CM Punk said, yeah, don't do that. You're going to get somebody hurt or something like that. And there's even a part in the pay-per-view where Jack Perry, we didn't review All In, unfortunately, so I can't say, oh, we looked at that. Well, anyway, there's even a spot where Jack Perry himself knocks on the glass, and then he says, while looking at the camera, real glass, cry me a river. So, you know, he's taking shots at CM Punk. Jack Perry wanted to use real glass for a wrestling spot that he was going to set up, and CM Punk wanted him not to use real glass so that someone didn't get hurt. But if that's the case, however, it would have been a problem. It wouldn't have been a problem for a, you know, like a wrestling company should be considered to be some sort of a multi-million dollar company. It shouldn't be a problem for a multi-million dollar company to support, or for that matter, not support, but for them to like... somehow circumvent, is what I should say, not support, but circumvent the usage of real glass. CM Punk could have handled this better. I'm not going to read my notes because this is a jumbled mess of kafuckery. CM Punk could have handled this better is what I'm trying to say here. And upon doing so, he could have talked to management. Allow me to take you to middle school, ladies and gentlemen. Whenever I was having a trouble, and I mean trouble with two individuals, one on my senior year of high school and one from my freshman year of high school. Now, the one from my freshman year, I was just having trouble dealing with this person. Simply because we had a difference of an opinion. I remember it starting off as, but he wanted to bug me every goddamn day. He wanted to bug me about everything, and I can't even remember what the fight was about, you know. He was a part of the band. He was a member of the wrestling team. I don't see how you juggle two things like that together, but it's not important. Water under the bridge, I suppose you could say. Middle school problems, you know. And I tried telling a teacher. That didn't work. Because we ended up fighting, you know. Put your fisticuffs up. But then we both got suspended. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. Even though CM Punk threw the first punch to Jack Perry, Jack Perry, apparently, sources have told me, had also gotten suspended, despite the fact that CM Punk threw the first punch. I'm struggling to take CM Punk, what he said seriously, and especially considering the fact that CM Punk had went on record this past week or 2 weeks ago and talking about AEW as though that they are, you know, some company that, oh, they're a bad company, and here's why. You know, like, you don't do that. You don't burn bridges. And on top of that, I thought for sure that CM Punk had already burned his bridge with WWE. But I guess I was wrong about that. Jungle Boy Jack Perry should have not been suspended simply for being involved into the fight. This is not high school where I remember, where I maybe got into two fights in my 4 years because they were picking on me. I tried to tell the teacher, you know what the weird thing is though, middle school or high school, whichever one that it was, doesn't matter, but, nothing got resolved until after they had heard, hey, you know, you got into a fight. You want to know what happened? I got suspended from the bus. I got suspended from, school, and that didn't help anything. But once it made the faculty, the school faculty look bad, that's whenever they were like, hey, you know, oh, we need to do something about this. And then they brought in this person's, I guess, aunt or uncle or whatever. I don't know. I never seen their face. It's not important. Any sort of school was because it made, yeah, it made the faculty look incompetent. We get what seems to be a promo from Bryan Danielson, except it's not exactly a promo. It's more of an advertisement and a highlights package of sorts. And it's a highlights package. We see Bryan Danielson's accomplishments thus far. And he says this could be his last year as a wrestler. He says that if this is his last year, he's going to make it the most impactful of his career. Then Excalibur comes in. His voice says that Excalibur talks of, if this is Bryan Danielson's last year, he compete at the level of the next generation. Can he compete at the level of the next generation? Then we go to introduce Bryan Danielson's opponent at Dynasty. Enter Will Ospreay. Now, Ospreay has a few reviews from me. One of them is a 2-star review, and that was a tag team match, not really his strong suit, but one of them is a 5-star review, in which that I gave him 5 stars. I agreed with someone that I never thought that I would agree with, in Dave Meltzer. So, key the image of me and Dave Meltzer shaking hands. And then the meme that says, you know, over Dave Meltzer, and then over me, and then what we're shaking hands and agreeing on. Anyway, despite that, I cannot see myself on a consistent basis agreeing with anything that Dave Meltzer has to say. Okay, moving on though. We get an interview from Will Ospreay. Has Danielson beat in many different categories? Yes. So Will Ospreay in this interview from Renee Paquette. Once again, she's been working all night. Goddamn, give her a break. You know, go in the back, go get a drink of champagne, Renee. Anyway, Will basically says that he has Danielson beat in many different categories. He's a better high flyer. He's a younger, hungrier athlete, so that you're younger would mean that, you know, you're probably got more endurance, you probably got more stamina. Then even say in the narration to his highlights package, okay, so the highlights package from earlier, it's not over. The narration from the highlights package that says that Bryan can actually win against Will Ospreay if Bryan can actually keep him on his back and keep him on the ground. As we know, he is one of the best technical wrestlers we have seen in a very long time. Will Ospreay sends a message to the, what I assume to be Triple H, because apparently Triple H had said in an interview that Will Ospreay is afraid of the grind. Now, he didn't say that exactly. I'm paraphrasing, but someone had asked Triple H something about hiring other individuals, and Triple H said, well, something along the lines of, whenever you're talking about stuff like that, it bothers me, he said, because other people say that they want the grind. But then they say, "Oh, well, I'm going to go over here because the schedule is lighter and you know, I get so many days off a week and I can do this and I can do that." And Triple H basically tried to bury Will Ospreay, but in doing so, I do believe that he picked on the wrong guy, because Will Ospreay takes a sort of a clap back in saying, seeing as though that the man who said that is only in the position that he's in because he was grinding on the boss's daughter. And yeah, I did put on my English accent for that one because Will Ospreay is somewhat English, and I'm glad he's not Canadian. He says, "You have no idea what I fight for. So let this be a friendly little reminder," he says, "to not throw stones at an assassin with a machine gun." Will Ospreay then goes on to talk about the highlights package that we just seen, building hype for the match that is supposed to be really good, I would imagine, at least. We are going to see a clash of styles, like we've never seen before, when Bryan Danielson faces off against Will Ospreay. And Ospreay had this to say about Danielson: "Younger men have tried and failed. Healthier men have tried and failed. Stronger men have tried and failed." Ospreay then goes on to say that Bryan is a living legend. The eerie music begins to play. Julia Hart lights a match in a dark, decrepit room. She starts to whisper her opponent's name, and then she starts to do some vintage shots, followed by the camera going in many different angles, a lot of camera motions, a lot of tricks. Julia Hart beckoning through the light, explaining to Willow Nightingale why she doesn't stand a chance, and why she's bitten off more than she can chew. Julia Hart states that the house always wins. The lights go out, and then after that we get Hook, Jericho, Shibata versus Shane Taylor Promotions, and Anthony Ogogo. This match is really boring. I'm just gonna level with you guys. I don't really like it. You remember earlier where I briefly stated that Renee Paquette was trying to like get an interview with the team of Hook, Jericho, and Shibata? Well, here's what happens, basically. Before Shibata says that he likes Renee Paquette's necklace, let's be honest, he wasn't looking at her necklace. Before he said that, and before anything else like took place, Jericho said, "As long as you listen to me, stay under the learning tree, we won't have any problems." Well, they don't listen to him. Jericho taking control of the match by throwing Lee Moriarty. He's the other part of Shane Taylor Promotions. He's the guy that I'd forgotten to write down here. But anyway, Lee Moriarty is his name. And he's done some accomplishments or whatever. I don't mean to like undermine him or anything, but into the ropes and trying to wear him down. And also, Excalibur has to tell us that this match is brought to you by Woo Energy Drinks. Ric Flair has his own line of energy drinks now, ladies and gentlemen. That's right, you heard me correctly. Ric Flair has his own line of energy drinks. Steve Austin has his own beer, believe it or not. It's an IPA. You can go online and buy it as well. I'm not sure where to find the Woo energy drinks from. After this, though, I'm going to go online. I'm going to try to... So, YouTubers do reviews of products. I'm going to try to find a product review of the Woo energy drink. Because this is so funny to me that Ric Flair has his own energy drink. WWE actually used to have their own energy drink, and it was called a Y2 Stinger, something like that. Y2J Stinger. And it used to be called, like, I remember the commercials back in the day, it was like, Y2J, feel the sting, which... And the commercials had, like, Triple H on it. They had, like, a few other people. But I remember trying it as a kid. And then my mom got wind that I was drinking this stuff. Which, I mean, she was buying it for me, so I don't see how she didn't know. But anyway, she apparently looked at the ingredients and then she told me that I've been drinking cocaine. Which isn't true at all. She's retarded. Because they wouldn't put that in an energy drink. And anyway, years later, WWE would try again to come up with another energy drink. And this one I didn't get to try, but apparently got pulled from shelves. And it was called Socko. So make of that what you will. The name of the energy drink. How appetizing does that sound? Socko. Anyway, I'm just going to get back to the match. This match is brought to you by Woo Energy Drink, by the way. Shibata not sponsored, by the way. None of those were sponsored. Shibata tags himself in, and now Shibata comes in off the tag, taking control of the match. And to my knowledge, this is Shibata's, it might be his inner... Hang on, his first match. His debut. There we go. they make a big deal out of him being like here. Apparently, he's like really good. Lee Moriarty tags out to Shane Taylor, and Hook gets the tag off Shibata. So Shane Taylor gives a chop that echoes throughout the arena to Hook. And the second time Shane Taylor tags out, they're trying to isolate Hook from his corner. Anthony Ogogo gets the tag and starts to isolate Hook from his corner into the opposite corner. So they make a big deal also about Anthony Ogogo being here, saying that in the Olympics he competed and he won a silver medal in boxing. And he had an MMA career that spanned like 3 years or something, and he went 17-0 or something like that. I'm not sure how much of that is true, or whether or not it's just to buff Anthony Ogogo's resume, or what they're doing, why they're saying all this. But I remember just, I didn't take notes, but, you know, I didn't put this on my notes, but I remembered it from this match, because it's one of those things that you're like, oh, here's this match. Great. Then Shane Taylor gets the tag in from Anthony Ogogo. Hook being beat up and taken every which corner except for his own. The audience is in attendance, seems to be having some sort of fun. It's good that they're having fun, because I'm bored watching this match. I hate multi-man matches. Shane Taylor is beating up Hook and keeps him grounded as the people are chanting, Hook, Hook, Hook. To see this man the size of... to see a man the size of Hook pick up Shane Taylor... and get him off his feet, the feat of strength, to see a 170-pound man who might be picking up Shane Taylor, who's probably 270, if not 300. I could be wrong, but it's clear that he's at least 3.5 times the size, because Hook picks up Shane Taylor like he's nothing, and he just destroys him. Tag made to Shibata. Also, Shane Taylor tags in Lee Moriarty, the guy that Shane Taylor tags in Lee Moriarty. Chris Jericho stops Shibata from making the tag, trying to get Hook on the outside to listen to him. That's the only thing that Jericho does, too. So Shibata's trying to tag out. Jericho pulls Hook down from the corner, and then afterwards he looks at him and then he says, "Listen, you've got to listen to me. Listen." And then he just keeps repeating that, "Hey, hey, are you listening?" or something like that. Anyway, he's providing some sort of distraction. Shane Taylor promotion wins the match. They told his story here. As I stated before, though, it almost seems like as though that Jericho allowed his character flaw that I mentioned before to get in the way of here, because right as Shibata is looking for the tag out, Jericho pulls away Hook for the distraction on his own teammate. And for that matter, this match, like, why is it here? They don't talk about how this proceeds to go anywhere as far as their next pay-per-view goes. They've been talking about it all night. Dynasty, dynasty, dynasty. As though that this pay-per-view, that they're trying to sell you tickets. But here, they don't mention it one time. They don't talk about Dynasty. What's Dynasty? Never heard of it. You know, it's an event that's taking place on April 21st. Sunday, April 21st. Go to AEWTIX.com and go get your tickets today. It will be taking place in the, I guess, the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis, Missouri. That's the only center that I'm aware of that's in St. Louis, Missouri. Anyway, Renee, once again, I cannot pronounce her name. And then I put a maybe here. Now, her last name is Paquette, I do believe, but I don't think that I'm saying it right. P-A-Q-U-E-T-T-E. What kind of French bullshit is this? Anyway, Renee Paquette, possibly, asks Dustin how he's feeling about tonight's main event. Dustin will face off against Samoa Joe. So you remember earlier on in the contest, whenever Samoa Joe got attacked from behind by his opponent, Swerve Strickland. Samoa Joe got attacked from behind. Maybe I should have opened with that. Haha. So I like to pride myself on my consistency, but I didn't write that down in my notes, did I? Well, earlier on in the program, you remember the thing that I said was rather controversial for it being the opening contest? Yeah, well, now it's the main event. But the point that I'm trying to hammer home is the fact that the match didn't happen because someone interfered and attacked Samoa Joe from behind. So now they've went ahead and they, just like the advertisement said that I was mentioning before, the advertisement did say that it was going to be the main event, and that's exactly what they're going to do. Dustin Rhodes goes on to say that he's got nothing to lose and everything to gain. And he also says grit, work ethic, and glory. That's what it takes. And tonight will be no different. Rainmaker Okada makes his AEW debut. And Okada is making his AEW debut, his debut in AEW, but nobody knows who the local jobber is. Cristillo. Okada wins the match. Was barely a 30 seconds. In barely 30 seconds, Okada wins by pinfall victory and a clothesline. So he clotheslines the man. I'm pretty sure the name of the move that he did is called the Rainmaker. Because he is Okada, he is the Rainmaker. I fail to understand why we need people who are jobbers. Like, this match was a good, if it was a good 10 minutes, if it was a good 10-minute contest where the jobber maybe made me believe that he was actually going to win, it would have made it for a lot better contest than a match that was a squash match going for over in 30 seconds. 1 out of 5 stars, and I don't want to give Okada a 1 out of 5 star review, but that's what I'm forced to do here. Wrestling magazines, ladies and gentlemen, wrestling publishing companies, wrestling journalists, and wrestling enthusiasts. We all know who Okada is. By this point in his career, he is well known to the wrestling community. So, I'm doing something brazen here. I'm probably doing something that nobody's done before. I'm giving Okada a 1 out of 5 stars. I do not look forward to the backlash. Okada would have a small amount of words to say to that bastard Pac. He accepts the challenge at Dynasty. So Dynasty, it will be the Rainmaker, Okada, versus the bastard Pac. For the, I don't know, there's supposed to be a title on the line, but I didn't catch that. Anyway, we hear from the Bang Bang Gang. Of course, those of you unfamiliar, that is Jay White, commonly referred to as the Switchblade Jay White, and Austin and Colton, the Gun Brothers. They're here to talk about their assault on the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass. We are joined on the ramp by Renee Paquette, who is here to tell us about the Charleston Champagne Toast here in Charleston, West Virginia, where Toni Storm will be toasting her championship title victory, or her championship title reign, rather. I don't know what they're doing, but half of the camera is black and white. Usually I would attribute this to a screen effect, but if it were a screen effect, it would take up the entire half of the screen. You can pay attention to what I'm saying here. Half of your television screen is black and white, but the other half is in color. How? Tell me how. Go ahead. I'm waiting. All right. That's what I thought. Anyway, not exactly sure half of the TV is color and is in HD, and the other half is black and white. Because every time you see this, every time you see Toni Storm, she always appears in black and white picture in segments or promos, something of that nature. Renee tells Toni that the floor is hers, and if she wants to start this toast, if she has anything, she would now, if she would want to say anything, now would want to be the time. Toni then proceeds to throw her champagne that she had in her glass onto Thunder Rosa, her opponent, who was also there for the champagne tasting. So half of the screen was black and white, the other half was color. The half that was color, Thunder Rosa, who is making her AEW return, was on the half that was color. I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm delaying some of my words or slurring them. But anyway, Tony Storm throws the champagne in Thunder Rosa's eye and proceeds to beat her up. And then Deonna Purrazzo comes out and starts to help Tony Storm push her away and starts to help Thunder Rosa, I mean. And Thunder Rosa, not realizing what's happening, she thinks that it's still Tony Storm trying to attack her, and she sort of pushes Deonna Purrazzo out of the way, thinking that, you know, she's got to start mounting some offense. But then Deonna Purrazzo leaves. Thunder Rosa tries to get the upper hand out on Tony Storm, who by this point in time had already retreated a little bit after pouring champagne in someone's eye. And we get, like, this whole thing is just breaking down. It was supposed to be a toast, right? That I didn't see any toast. Both figuratively and literally. Like, I didn't see any bread that had been put into the toaster. And I didn't see any, like, anybody toasting to or celebrating anything. Before our next match begins, I feel it is extremely important for me to tell you about Tony Schiavone. It seems as though that Tony Schiavone has had champagne in his eye before. He proceeds to tell us, and the commentary team, he proceeds to tell the commentary team about trying to relate to what had just unfolded between the two ladies, Tony Storm and Thunder Rosa, because Storm just attacked Rosa, and in doing so, it kicked off her attack. She kicked off her attack by throwing champagne in her eyes. Tony Schiavone says, "Have you ever had champagne in your eyes?" Then proceeds to tell the commentary team that what happened to him one day during a baseball game. Then he proceeds to go even further and ask the commentary team if they've ever had face paint in their eyes, because Thunder Rosa, not Mendez, she's a different wrestling lady somewhere else. Thunder Rosa has face paint, and more than likely the champagne was thrown in her eye, the champagne and the face paint in her eye. Tony Schiavone then says that he's had face paint in his eye, but that's a story for another day. Then why bring it up? Why even bring it up? Anyway, Maisha Mariah, my fault, Mariah May versus Anna Jay. We get what seems to be a chop battle between the two young ladies, and they stalemate. Mariah May with a headbutt to Anna Jay, and this time it's starting to pick up speed. Both ladies are down. Mariah May with a chop on the outside to Anna Jay. Anna with a chop of her own to Mariah. Anna Jay with yet another chop to Mariah. Sometimes you act like you're going to chop people and you don't. So what happens is Mariah gets Anna outside, and then she acts as though that she's about to chop her, because that's all that this match has been thus far, is nothing more than a chopping contest. She acts as though that she's winding back her hand to chop Anna, does Mariah, and then all of a sudden she just says nope, and then she points her, she like takes her pointer finger out and starts pointing it to all the people in the crowd, and then she's like laughing at them for believing that she would do such a thing. And on commentary, Taz has something to say. He says, "Sometimes you act like you're going to chop people, and you don't." You want to know what, just so we're on the same page here, I'm trying not to laugh. I really am. Because Excalibur says, "You're the best analyst in the business," sarcastically remarked. He's like sarcastic about it too. He's like, "Wow, Taz, you're the best analyst in the business." And then he says, "Thanks." Exactly. Oh my God, I can't stand it. Anyway, Mariah with a shoulder tackle goes for the pin, but only gets a two count on Anna Jay, and I'm pretty sure that's the first pinfall of this match. does the top rope move? I'm not sure what to call it, and very seldom does that happen. Nonetheless, what I mean to say is a top rope maneuver, and Anna Jay goes for the pin. She only gets a two count on Mariah May, who kicks out. Mariah May going for a hip attack in the corner. Shades of her mentor, Toni Storm. She only gets a two count off the pin afterwards. Earlier, she tried the attack and it failed, and Anna Jay ended up putting Mariah May on the ground and only getting a two count. Anna Jay with a spin kick only gets a two count off the cover. It looks as though that Anna was going for the Widow's Peak or another move commonly referred to in the same position as the Goro Special, but Mariah May reversed the move into a Code Red, and then the three and the win. So Mariah May ended up reversing the Goro Special into the Code Red pinning predicament maneuver, and Mariah May ended up winning this match, and I gave it 2.5 out of 5 stars. We get an interview from the self-professed CEO, Mercedes Moné. Now, for those of you who don't know, this is just evolution at its finest hour. If you'll remember, Sasha Banks used to be the boss of the WWE. Well, now she's the CEO of AEW. So, you know, it's props to you, Sasha Banks. Props to you. You know, like, I feel like that's some pretty good... Okay. So, you're no longer the boss. Now you're the CEO. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm getting carried away. The interview of the self-professed CEO, Mercedes Moné. And right as the interview is about to, the interviewer is about to ask her, who would she rather face at Dynasty? I'm sorry, after Dynasty. April 21st, there will be another event after April 21st called Double or Nothing on May 26th, practically 30 days after, where Mercedes Moné will get the opportunity to face off against one of two women, the current TBS champion Julia Hart, or if Julia Hart doesn't win her match against Willow Nightingale. Something tells me she's going to win her match against Willow Nightingale. Just throwing it out there. then Willow Nightingale will face off against Mercedes Moné. However, just as the interviewer is about to ask her, who would you rather face? All of a sudden, trademark, the lights go out. Whenever the lights go out, Mercedes Moné is on the ground. Now, just out of curiosity, everyone, you do know that whenever the lights go out, usually it's something bad, The Undertaker, maybe, Kane, possibly. Mankind, maybe. Aleister Black. House of Black. Hopefully I didn't hear any, you know, screaming children whenever I said his name. Hopefully there wasn't any glass that broke, you know, thunderstorms that I maybe invoked. Or how about Julia Hart? Something tells me that she's going to win and go on to face off against the CEO because they're planting the seeds here. The interviewer asks, you know, who would you rather face off against? Julia Hart, the current TBS, rather, champion, or Willow Nightingale? There's only one possibility that it could have been. Who turned the lights off? Who attacked Mercedes Moné? So, it's obvious. It's obvious that Willow Nightingale is losing to Julia Hart. Julia Hart has all the momentum. They just gave away their pay-per-view. Otherwise, this doesn't make sense. Why would the CEO, Mercedes Moné, face off against Julia Hart unless there was something in it for her? This would have to be a marquee match, so it would have to be for the championship. Otherwise, here's what's going to happen. Julia Hart loses to Willow Nightingale. It's not a very popular, you know, but let's say that Willow finds a way to win, okay? Hypothetically speaking, what would happen if that were to happen? I'm pretty sure CEO Mercedes Moné getting her title shot, like, that's not just going to happen like that. No, what's going to happen is Julia Hart's going to want a rematch. I see that happening, you know. And how can Willow Nightingale face off against Mercedes Moné in a one-on-one competition without first, like, contractually obligated is Julia Hart to have a rematch? Hopefully I'm making some sort of semblance of sense here. Given what we see at the end of the interview, however, I do believe that we will... This is planting the seeds for Julia Hart versus Mercedes Moné. Therefore, telling me that Julia Hart's going to pick up the victory off of Willow Nightingale at the Dynasty pay-per-view. Otherwise, that interview that they just had there makes no sense, and the consistency is not there. Straight from the beginning, as soon as the bell rings, Dustin Rhodes takes the fight to Samoa Joe. So we finally come to our main event. Samoa Joe facing off against Dustin Rhodes. And straight from the fight, straight from the opening bell, we get Dustin Rhodes taking the fight to Samoa Joe in the corner. And Samoa Joe throws Dustin Rhodes into the steel ring post to the outside of the ring. Dustin Rhodes is bleeding. Joe keeping Dustin on the mat, going for a pin, only to get a two count. Keeping Dustin Rhodes on his back, Joe is trying to exploit what Tony Schiavone says is a gash on Dustin Rhodes' forehead. These Charleston fans are making a lot of noise, perhaps to let Dustin Rhodes feel their energy. Joe with an elbow, a senton, a pin, an Irish whip. Then Joe goes for a pin only to get a two count. Dustin Rhodes with a last-ditch effort to take control of this match with a vintage Dustin Rhodes move, a twirling power slam. And Samoa Joe on his back for the first time in this match. Dustin Rhodes with a code red pinning maneuver only gets a two count. Samoa Joe with a reversal off of the Bulldog into the corner from Dustin Rhodes. He reversed the Irish whip into a lariat, knocking Dustin Rhodes out of the ring. Dustin Rhodes hits Samoa Joe with the Crossroads Cody Rhodes finishing maneuver, then goes for a pin. He only gets a two count. Most podcast hosts wouldn't like this, but in the world of professional wrestling, you sometimes have to suspend your disbelief, and in this case, that's exactly what I'm going to do, and I'm going to have to add points for the match doing exactly what it did, told a story, only did a story, but it made me wait a week before I got to see the results of that story, because last week I was thinking about how to return from podcasting. That's how I was going to blow open the doors of the podcast that I created. How can I return to you guys when I've been and also make a halfway interesting show? The close of the match sees Samoa Joe grab a chain that he was holding during the entrance because he did get attacked earlier in the night at the open of the contest, because the match was supposed to be the opening contest, but instead of being the opening contest, it was the main event, because they said that they had to push it back to make sure that Joe was able to compete. Nonetheless, what happened, what I mean to say is that Joe grabbed a chain. Referee Paul Turner noticed that Samoa Joe had a foreign object in his hand and proceeded to take it away from him. Then Joe let the chain go while the referee's back was turned, while the referee was giving the chain to the timekeepers and the announce team, saying, "Hey, hold on to this." You know, like he's trying to choke him with the chain. Joe then picked up the World Heavyweight Championship and he hit Dustin Rhodes in the head with it. And after the foreign object that he had, Dustin Rhodes would, of course, that being the World Championship, the referee turned around, not knowing that Samoa Joe had just got done bashing in a man's head with a championship title belt, and counts the three. Your winner, Samoa Joe. I thought that this would be a back and forth, high points for both men, but it was an absolute massacre for one man, and that was Samoa Joe. He made an example out of Dustin Rhodes. I give it 3.5 out of 5 stars. Only thing missing from this match being 4 out of 5 stars, or making it any higher, is the fact that Dustin Rhodes was nothing more than a human pincushion for most of this match. He did have some high points that made him look like he was, you know, mounting some offense. But Samoa Joe definitely destroyed this man. Thank you all so much for joining me. This has been the Gut Wrench Podcast. My name is Mocha, as you all know. I do apologize for being gone for almost all of April. It's only been like 2 weeks, right? Three weeks, yeah. But I will be coming back to a regular schedule. All things considered, it is a little weird, you know, doing this podcast in a hotel room. Provided that those drunks that I mentioned earlier stay away from my hotel room, then yes, I will try to come up with some, and it might sound like that I'm whispering. I can assure you that I'm not whispering. But you know, the people in the other room, in the other hotel room, can hear me, I'm assuming, because sometimes I can hear them. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and sign off. Good night. And that's a wrap. Bang.